Welcome to the Versus History Podcast with your hosts, Patrick O'Shaughnessy, Connell Smith and Elliot Watson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this episode of the Versus History Podcast. It's me, Patrick O'Shaughnessy, at History Chappie, on behalf of the Versus History editorial team. We are delighted to be joined today by historical novelist Jennifer Anton. Now, Jennifer, I'm going to put it over to you to tell us the title of your brand new book, what it's all about, and a little bit about you, your background, and why you chose to write this. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here and, really excited to tell you about my novel. So the name of the novel is Under the Light of the Italian Moon, and it's actually launching on March 8th, which is International Women's Day. So I'm very excited about that. Just to tell you a little bit about me and my background, I am an American-Italian dual citizen. I was born in Joliet, Illinois, which is, just south of Chicago. And in 2012, my husband and I decided to move abroad, take our daughter and move abroad. So we moved to Milan, and then eventually we moved to London. And now we sort of, split our time between Italy and London. So I've had, mostly a corporate career in beauty and fashion marketing for companies like Revlon and Tory Burch. But for the past 14 years, in the background, I've been writing this novel and researching this novel. And it's really about the women in my family living under fascist rule and World War II. And basically, it comes off of learning about my ancestors. So my mother is 100% Italian. She was born in the U.S., and her father was from Lake Como, actually in a small town that is south of Dongo, which is where Mussolini was captured. And my grandmother, my mom's mom, was from a town called Fonzaso, Italy. And that's where my novel takes place. So Fonzaso is in the northeast of Italy, up against the mountains. And I really found out about that kind of throughout my life in little increments. So it started really when I was in high school. We learned about World War II, but when you learn about World War II and you're in America, you really learn about it from an American perspective. So you might hear about Germany, you might hear about Russia, you will hear about Pearl Harbor, et cetera, but we really didn't talk a lot about Italy whatsoever. And I knew that my grandmother was born in Italy, but she had never talked about her life in Italy, not at all. So one night I went over to my grandma's house and I asked her, Grandma, did World War II have any impact on you, or, were you there? And that really just led her to sharing with me some stories that I had no idea about. So really, I had never even heard of the town of Fonzaso until that point. And she explained to me that the Nazis had occupied her small town. And she told me some stories of the Nazi atrocities that had taken place. And of course, I was really enthralled by this. But being a teenager, as you do, you kind of just move forward with your life and continue on. But then as my life went on, and as I was, come 2006, I was pregnant with my daughter, and I bought a notebook and wrote down all these questions that I wanted to ask my grandmother about her life. And unfortunately, I didn't get to ask them because she went into the hospital right after my baby shower. A couple weeks later, I went into an emergency C-section with my daughter and ended up going into heart failure myself with a very serious condition called a peripartum cardiomyopathy. And when I rebounded, my grandmother passed away. So this all happened within a two-week period. And what I saw during that time was really interesting, just this microcosm, and it brought this epiphany of women and Italian women, my mother standing up talking about her mother, really not knowing anything about her life in Italy, but my mother becoming a grandmother, my grandmother passing away, myself becoming a mother, all of that kind of morphed into this explosion of reality of what is womanhood, what is motherhood. And it became a bit of an obsession to learn about my grandmother's life and find out, what were the stories that I didn't hear about. And so I started researching, interviewing Italians in the US, Canada, and Italy who had lived through the time period. I got on planes and flew to Fonzaso and sat down with people, sat across from elderly people, drinking lots of cups of coffee and having lots of aperitivos with these people and with translators there. And I really started to get the picture of life back then and life under Mussolini. And along this time, obviously it was a 14-year period until my book finally, you know, was ready, but I started also reading a lot to understand the time period. So for example, books like Victoria de Grazia's How Fascism Ruled Women, that was incredibly helpful to me to understand motherhood, to understand life under fascism. And especially because I found out that my great-great-grandmother was a midwife and, you know, she was practicing before Mussolini came in and while he was in, all of those policies that impacted women had a huge impact or would have had a huge impact on my family. So, you know, books like Richard Lamb's Brutal War, that was incredibly helpful. You know, I read Perry Wilson's book, Masai Rurali. There's several PhDs out there who are, you know, doing work like Jennifer Kosin, who really focused on the history of midwifing in Italy. And then also, you know, a lot of fiction to understand just the mentalities of people during that time. So Bassani and Moravia and Robin Pickering Iazzi did a phenomenal translation of a book called Unspeakable Women, where she really pulled together all of these stories of women under fascism and their writing. And so along the way, as I sort of collected all these stories from my family members, eight in total, so four that had moved out of Italy and had immigrated, four who had stayed in Italy and continued there, and then laid sort of the history underneath all of these stories, I then started to tie them together with this weave of imagination then to connect all this together. So there's a lot of truth to the book, but then it's also connected with, you know, what I don't know, and then, you know, kind of built into this biographical fiction novel, which is Under the Light of the Italian Moon. So yeah, that's basically how it all came to be.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. I know I think you've touched on a lot of this. Anyway, why did you choose to begin writing a work of historical fiction? And then how did you conduct your research on it? We'd love to hear about that journey towards writing the book itself.
Yeah, so I mean, as I said, you know, it was really those two things of working through the piece with the family stories and connecting all of that together with the history. But you know, when I went to Italy, I, for example, went to the University of Padua. And I had read about the University of Padua in some of these, you know, documents from these various professors and so forth. But I, you know, I landed and went with my daughter, and we had an intention of actually meeting with this woman who had been quoted in some of the research. Her name was Marina Cimino. And when we got to Padua, and we had an appointment in the afternoon that was going to be with one of the professors there who ran the maternity and obstetrics teaching, we ended up going and walking around, and there was a major exhibition going on called Venire alla Luce, which means to come to the light, which is how Italians, you know, look at birth. And it was phenomenal. Just the whole thing was put together really well and shared all of the tools that were used by midwives, et cetera. But when we got to meet with Gaetano Manfreda at the University of Padua, we found out that unfortunately Marina Cimino had passed away. So he took us through and showed us all of these various things that midwives would have trained on. And I was actually able to see some of the anatomical models, you know, from the late 1800s and early 1900s, which was incredible. So, you know, talking to him, sitting down and really talking with all of these people who all of a sudden started bringing out these fascinating things. So I started getting emails from people with images of my great-grandfather underneath a picture of Mussolini. And I realized that not only was he sort of a card-carrying fascist, but he was, you know, very involved locally in the fascist community. When I went to Fonzazzo and walked around and walked the streets of where my story took place, there's obviously a lot of commemorations to the atrocities that happened there. And of course, walking through the cemetery, you can really feel, and it's not just about the research then, it's also about really getting the feel for what these people went through, for what day-to-day life was like, the smells, the scents, the feelings of life in Fonzazzo up against, you know, the Dolomites in the pre-Alps, and really thinking about what would it have been like to live under Mussolini and you know, experience life under that sort of reign and then eventually Nazi occupation. So yeah, it was really a combination of secondary research, primary research, and really trying to put myself in the shoes of these women. And of course it was over a 14-year time period. So there was a lot to it.
Thank you, Jennifer. Okay, then. Again, I think you've touched on a lot of this already, but imagine there's somebody out there listening, perhaps on their way to work, that wants to purchase a new book whenever they arrive at the train station or terminus. So what is your new book all about, in short? It's called Under the Light of the Italian Moon. So what's it all about, in short, and what is the sort of general context and backstory?
Yeah, so the context is basically, it's a love story and a story of women's resilience during the rise of fascism and World War II. And it tells the story of Nina Argenta. She's the daughter of a strong-willed midwife, and she falls in love with Pietro Ponte. He's this boy from Fonzazzo who emigrates to the coal mines of America. And over the years, as Mussolini's power grows, Nina really helps her mother support the women of Fonzazzo. But when World War II begins, she loses touch with Pietro. And then we have to see her survive with her family under Nazi occupation and all the atrocities that worsen as the war goes on, with, of course, the hope that she'll be reunited at some point with her beloved, who's in America. So it's really two parts. It's a love story. So it's the story of really enduring love between Nina and Pietro. But it's also really a tribute to women, and particularly the rural women and the midwives who lived through World War I, who lived through the rise of fascism and all the difficult, you know, policies that Il Duce put in place to control women and their fertility. And it's a story about how women held their families together to help each other through Nazi occupation. These women were really unsung heroes, and I believe they've been silenced by history. They don't get the attention that they deserve, and it's certainly my mission not to let that happen.
Now, I know a lot of our listeners have Italian ancestry. They're Italian Americans or Italians that live in Europe, part of the wider diaspora, or Italian themselves, because we've interviewed Dr. Dave Brown and Professor Di Grazia as well in the past. So I know there's lots of interest in Italian history generally amongst our listenership. So what do you consider to be the key themes, episodes, events and individuals in Italian history which have sculpted the context in which your novel takes place?
Sure. So the novel covers a very long time period. It starts off in 1914. Nina is 10 years old and Pietro's 15. And it's the evening before he's about to leave and emigrate to America. And she finds out that night that her brother is also leaving for America. So emigration is a big part of the impetus and sort of the catalyst for the start of this book. And obviously it was something that was a massive issue in Italy. At first sort of looked at positively by the government, and then, you know, things changed. But, you know, men had to leave or chose to leave in order to have better opportunities abroad and to send money ideally back to Italy. And so that really is a big piece of it. And that's something that's very common, to your point. A lot of Italians living abroad, especially, you know, myself, Italian Americans, I can't tell you how many people have said, yes, that happened. You know, my family was separated like that too. And you know, I think looking back, you think to yourself, how do people live apart that long? And I remember as I was young, you know, it was always, oh, well, they were stronger back then. Things were different. But it's very easy to look at black and white photos and think that these, you know, and erase these people's emotions and erase any sort of, you know, concerns and feelings that they have, because you feel like, oh, well, that was so far in the past. But these were people who had, you know, feelings and concerns and fears just like we did. So immigration was a massive issue. And that's one of the first things that kind of, you know, is really the impetus for the start of the book, because Nina sees men leaving, young boys even leaving to go abroad. And she has a mother who's a midwife, and she thinks to herself, wow, you know, my mother's doing something remarkable with her life. You know, she's not like all the other women in town. There's something special about her that makes her different. Look at all these people moving to America. What is this all about? She's curious. She thinks it's interesting. So immigration is one big theme. The next one, and you know, throughout the entire book, which, you know, won't be a surprise, is really Mussolini's rise then. Because we then flip to post-World War I, and we flip to Mussolini coming into power, you know, with the march on Rome in 1922. And as he comes in, we see all of his policies, and we get to feel them from the perspective of a rural woman who's living through this with a mother who is a midwife and a husband who is abroad. So obviously we first see Onmi come into place, which is a positive thing, you know, lowering the infant mortality rate and improving maternal health. So Adelagia della Santa, who is Nina's mother, they call her La Capitana. She, you know, would have seen this as something that's very positive. But then we start to see with the 1927 Ascension Day speech, the battle for births, and this concept that, you know, as Mussolini said, war is to man as maternity is to a woman. And, you know, a woman becomes a vessel for the state, and her main job is to provide babies for the population and for the military. And of course, as a midwife, you know, you're being told now that you cannot, it's illegal for you to communicate to women how to limit births, how to, you know, abortion is certainly illegal, but also contraceptive communication. So educating women to procedere con cautela, or which is proceed with caution, or coitus interruptus, all of those things are banned. They're actually illegal. And you can imagine for a midwife who might want to help educate women about, you know, how many births they have, that becomes something that is controlled. And the midwives are really that connection to the community. So, you know, how would they be feeling about these policies that Mussolini was putting in place? And of course, you know, he painted a very negative picture of any kind of modern working city woman, and then, you know, created this beautiful picture of the rural women having lots of babies, staying at home, and so forth. But so in under the light of the Italian moon, you know, we really take you into the town, into the homes of these women under fascism. So you can see the reality and the impact of all the policies that happen, as well as, you know, under the guise of being very Catholic. The Northeast region is very Catholic. And so you see the dynamics at play there as well. And the Virgin Mary being an incredibly strong icon and you know, almost a metaphor for the concept that I bring forward in the book, that women create and men destroy. But I'm very happy that it celebrates real women and paints the picture of these policies, you know, in real life, so that the reader can experience it for themselves. And then finally, I think the other key theme, not theme, but the key history moment is Nazi occupation and the atrocities under World War II. So, you know, Northern Italy was heavily impacted, and Il Duce eventually leads Italy down a path into war and an alliance with Nazi Germany. So after 1943, when Rome casts out Il Duce and aligns with the Allies, life becomes absolutely unbearable for these characters. And that's all covered in the book.
In your opinion, Jennifer, what impact did Nazi occupation have on Italy?
Yeah, so Nazi occupation was especially devastating for Northern Italy, where my book takes place. Being so close to the mountains and Austria, there were partisans hiding everywhere. And while at first, of course, the Nazis came in and, you know, tried to claim that they were friends, and, you know, in the north, they claimed the region as the Republic of Salo. So, you know, they had Mussolini and Legarda kind of leading this puppet state. And, you know, they tried to really do a lot of propaganda that they were friendly. And, you know, I did hear stories of, you know, of Nazis that were in the town who, you know, who bounced babies on knees and who were, you know, sometimes kind to the local population. But that quickly turned, because as the partisan activity ramped up, the repercussions came down on the civilians. And so there's actually a website that's really interesting. It's the Atlas of Nazi and Fascist Massacres. And you can type in the region. And, you know, if you look at Belluno, it's just an absolute sea of red, because there was something called Repressalia Tedesca, which meant that for every one German that was killed, 10 Italians had to be killed. And these atrocities were really some of what my grandmother told me about. And, you know, it was the children who were witnessing things that were just terrible. I mean, everything from, you know, hangings in the piazza, executions at gunpoint of people that you knew. And, you know, one particular tragedy that happened in Fonzazzo over a 2-day period that actually happened to somebody who was very close to my grandmother. And that is a very important piece of the novel. So certainly the Nazi occupation had a massive impact and was devastating for Northern Italy.
One of the key characters in the book is a character called Nina. The details of her life in Italy are so exquisite, intricate, and immersive. Are there any particular aspects, Jennifer, that you would like to share with our listeners as an hors d'oeuvre?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is what's unique about Nina is that she comes of age witnessing or sort of being part of every macro event that's happening in Italy during that time. So as I mentioned, as a young girl, you know, she really idolizes her mother, and she sees that in her mother being a local midwife, she has a power that other women don't have, and she's able to have an impact on others that other women don't have. So there's that aspect of her really idolizing her mother and wanting to lead a slightly different life than maybe your average rural woman. So that is a big part of it. Of course, she sees these men immigrating abroad, and that's interesting to her. It brings a lot of questions and curiosities in her mind. And then, of course, through World War One. So we don't spend a ton of time on World War One. We sort of flip from 1914 to 1919. But we hear about how she witnesses her mother, La Capitana, the strong midwife, going into the mountains to bring babies. And she's saving men who are killing each other in the mountains. And she's helping their babies be born and praying for their salvation. So all of this has a big impact on Nina. And then, of course, in 1923, you know, and throughout the rest of the book, we see Nina growing and changing as the politics really change in Rome. So alongside the joys and sorrows of her own life, you know, the things are happening throughout the society as well. And she is seeing firsthand how all of these are impacting the population because of the roles that her mother and then, you know, her helping her mother as a midwife really give her access to. Her mother was staunchly Catholic and was also professionally trained in Padua. So she's got this kind of lives under, you know, this large shadow of her mother in many ways. And this dynamic, you know, really plays out. And then her father is this fascist. So she sees all of this dynamic really playing out. And she's in her 30s when Nazis occupy. And we see her trying to protect her own daughters from the violence. Again, these wars that are created by men that she really, you know, has no involvement in, but she has to deal with the outcomes of all of these things. And she's just really a regular rural woman, but she's impacted greatly because of the result of all these men's actions and along with the impact of the legacy and the force of her mother. She's really a survivor, but she doesn't know her own strength because she's under this shadow of her mother for a lot of her life.
Final question. What are the three takeaway points that you would want readers of your book to know or remember?
I think three key takeaways. Well, I probably would give you 3.5. So first of all, I would say one of the provocative questions that I want this book to ask, and I hope that in book clubs around the world we'll have a discussion about, but is this concept that women create and men destroy, yet it is the women we erase. And these women really have to deal with the outcomes of the awful result of the decisions that men are making to drive for power, you know, entering into war. And the women have to watch their children and their husbands die. They don't get a seat at the table to make decisions, and they don't get remembered for their contribution. I think that this is really important because this concept played out obviously back then, but it also is something that we need to be aware of today. And hopefully by looking back in history, we can also apply these learnings to how we move forward in leadership and putting women in leadership in governments as well as in organizations. Then, you know, it's really about this connection of women and this evolving relationship of women, mothers and daughters in birth, in life and death, the fact that our relationships continue to evolve. It's this continuum of, you know, us becoming, you know, mothers and us looking at our children and then, you know, seeing them grow and all of a sudden watching them become capable and falling in love and doing all the things that we did. And then seeing our mothers get age and become nanas and so forth, like that entire mix of the strength and power of women as mothers, if they choose to be, and in as their contribution in society, that evolution, I think, is one of the key themes as well. And then finally, it's really about being wary of dictators, you know, and leaders who try to convince you that they're always right. And this is something that's incredibly important right now as we see the rise of neo-fascism all over the world, in Italy, you know, even in America, you know, all of these things are a concern. And I think we need to be aware of the little things that could happen along the way. And, you know, what happened to these people, they sort of gave and gave and gave a little bit and continued on with their lives. And then before they knew it, they were in a very, very scary situation. So that's definitely a key takeaway. But finally, it's really just this idea that because there is love, there is hope. And this is a story of hope. And in the end, Under the Light of the Italian Moon, you know, is really about that concept of strong women, about enduring love, and about our power to be a positive impact on the future. So that's really the key takeaways.
Well, thank you very, very much indeed, Jennifer Anton. A ferocious interview. So much to take away from it. Excuse the pun. We're very, very grateful. And our listeners, on International Women's Day, which I believe is the 8th of March, we'll be running some social media competitions. So look out for that. We'll be giving away a few copies of Jennifer's book. So please do look out for that. Jennifer, is there anything else that you wanted to share? Anything that my limited, parochial, short-sighted, myopic questions didn't give you the chance to talk about that you wanted to mention before we say goodbye?
The only thing I would say is I have a lot of images and the research at jenniferanton.com. So if you want to go there, you can see it and you can also get a free excerpt.
Brilliant. We'll share that via our social media platforms. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for taking time out of your day to come speak to us all about your brand new book. We're really excited to get our hands on it and hopefully share a few copies with our listeners as well. So thank you very, very much indeed, Jennifer. We hope you have a wonderful day and all the very, very best with your brand new book.
Grazie.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Versus History Podcast. Visit us at www.versushistory.com and follow us at Versus History on Twitter and Instagram. You can download all episodes from iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or from wherever you get your podcasts.